Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth.
And it's coming up straight away. Where would you hear this? You would only hear it on WBAI. Seeing the sun? And it is. It's clear in New York City right now. I see the buildings in the background and a blue sky in front of me. Stay tuned for Ecologic.
Paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? If they paradise put up a parking lot,
if they keep on prolonging.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for Wednesday, October 11th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today we'll be talking with Lloyd Wright of the National Resource Conservation Service and Joe Van Wy of Farm Action to discuss the largest conservation bill in the world, the Farm Bill. But first, we talk about a climate lawsuit by several young people against 32 countries, including all the European Union countries, a barren Caribbean island restored to its former natural glory, and New Jersey DEP's hidden data on the source water assessment program.
A few weeks ago, we reported on the victory by the Sunrise Movement and Our Children's Trust in Montana, where young people challenged what fossil fuels were doing to their future, and won thanks to Montana's Green Amendment. The stakes have been raised. According to BBC reporter Celine Garrett, whose article discusses a group of young people suing 32 countries, including all European Union members, the UK, Norway, Russia, Switzerland, Turkey, and the US. From the BBC website, they accuse the countries of insufficient action over the climate change and failing to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions enough to hit the Paris Agreement target of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. They claim that their fundamental human rights, including the right to life, privacy, family life, and to be free from discrimination, are being violated due to government's reluctance to fight climate change. None of the young applicants is seeking financial compensation. It's a very empowering article, which we link to from our website, ecoradio.org.
Gemma Handy wrote a Celebration of Nature article for the BBC website. The barren island Redonda near Antigua and Barbados has been turned into a green wildlife haven, now called the Redonda Ecosystem Reserve. Invasive species such as rats and goats are returned to the island barren, and once they are removed, the island can spring back to life. It's a nesting area for hundreds of seabirds of many different species. The ocean around the island has rebounded as well. The before and after photo in the article are very dramatic. We don't mean to be doing an ecotourism ad on WBAI, but any nature success is worth noting. And if this made you want to go there, then go for it. We link to the BBC article from the Ecologic website, www.ecoradio.org.
Bill Wolf reports on the Source Water Assessment Programs, SWAPs, that all states must do, required by Federal Safe Drinking Water Act, and specifically discusses the New Jersey DEP's data hidden deep in appendices to individual water systems and virtually never mentioned by media or environmental groups. New Jersey's SWAP plan incorporates the following four fundamental steps. One, determine the source water assessment area of each ground and surface water source of public drinking water. Two, inventory the potential contamination sources within the source water assessment area. Three, determine the public water system source's susceptibility to regulated contaminants. And four, incorporate public education and participation. Each water source received a susceptibility rating of high, medium, or low for each of the following contaminant categories: nutrients, pathogens, pesticides, volatile organic compounds, inorganics, radionuclides, radon, and disinfection byproduct precursors. The information is worth tracking down, even if it takes multiple clicks. Wolf notes provides a form to search for your community's results, to which we link to our site on ecoradio.org. This is for our own protection of our water sources, folks.
And now we welcome our guests, Lloyd Wright and Joe Van Wy, who spoke at the Farm Bill conferences that Sally recently attended. Please introduce yourself, Lloyd.
Yes, I'm Lloyd Wright. I'm a retired Natural Resource Conservation Service employee, and I also spent 2 years as Director of Civil Rights for the Department of Agriculture. I'm retired after a total of about 40 years with USDA, and I'm still a farmer, and I grow soybeans, and we grow oysters in the Northern Neck of Virginia.
Joe?
Thanks for having me, everybody. My name is Joe Van Wy. I am the Policy and Outreach Director at Farm Action Fund, a farmer-led nonprofit focused on addressing corporate overreach and monopoly power in the food system and supporting independent family farmers and revitalizing rural communities. Before I came over to Farm Action, I spent 7 years in Congress working for Congressman David Cicilline and then the House Antitrust Subcommittee.
So tell us about the Farm Bill and why it's important to everyone listening.
Joe? Yeah, of course. So the Farm Bill is one of the largest legislative packages that Congress really ever works on. Every 5 years, Congress works on and, in theory, passes the Farm Bill, which is a package that includes 12 different titles that really dictate everything that has to do with farm and food policy in the United States. There aren't really any other opportunities to make any changes to how we grow food. It also includes a significant amount of mandatory spending for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, which makes up the lion's share of the Farm Bill actual spending. But the other 11 titles focus on actual farm and food policy.
Lloyd, and Lloyd?
Yes. I've worked on the 1985 Farm Bill, which was one of the first farm bills that included some significant mandatory changes as it relate to erosion control and wetland protection. The Farm Bill, as stated by Joe, is a very comprehensive document covering 12 major titles. I consider the Farm Bill to be the beginning of policy development and program authorization and funding to some extent, appropriation through the CCC. However, the real implementation of the Farm
CCC
Bill,
is what?
Oh, the CCC is the Commodity Credit Corporation. It's really a funding pool that's is replenished by the federal government when it runs out, with billions of dollars available to the secretary to fund USDA programs. When we talk about mandatory programs, we're talking about programs that's funded through the Commodity Credit Corporation, which means you are not required to get annual appropriations. It's just direct funding. The secretary is also authorized to do new emergency things necessary to stabilize agriculture events. If we have an emergency in the milk market or cotton or other commodity programs, the secretary can use that funding pool, a large funding pool that's almost offline in terms of the Farm Bill development, and that it's assumed that it will always be refunded when it runs out of money. So it's and that funds a number of programs, including food and nutrition, conservation programs, credit. A number of the programs are funded through that and not through appropriations.
Well, I can see why it's a trillion-dollar bill with all of that going on. The American Bird Conservancy called it the largest conservation bill in the world. How is the Farm Bill a conservation bill, too?
Well, that's one of the titles in the Farm Bill. There is a conservation title. There's also a commodity title. And they are somewhat connected in that some of the things that you are required to do to get your commodity program payments require that you do certain conservation measures. But the Farm Bill will authorize, it does two things. It develops policy for what farmers must do in order to continue to do to receive payments. And it also provides funding for both technical assistance and for cost sharing or direct payments for carrying out certain conservation measures. Mm. For example, no-till, cover crops, even putting in structural measures, waterways, you know, and et cetera. Those kind of things are funded in the conservation program. And over the last few years, they have increased the funding to that program. And if you combine the conservation funding from the Inflation Reduction Act with the money available in the Farm Bill, it is the largest environmental conservation program ever. Yeah. I need to add, however, just because a program or measure is being funded under the label of conservation doesn't necessarily mean it's going to improve the environment. Uh-huh. That to a large extent, we've started to lean toward pesticides, herbicides, et cetera, to carry out measures. And I'm not always convinced that some of these measures end up buying us what we're paying for. So I think we need to do more in evaluating the programs. And the other concern is that most of the money out of these programs end up in the hands of a few. And I was asked at a program last week whether or not the minority farmers, particularly Black farmers, applied as many conservation measures as the other farmers. And the answer was no, simply because many of the programs that have been run by the Department of Agriculture are run through what they call county committees. And these committees are selected by those who are on the program for benefits. They vote for others who are receiving those benefits, and they run the program at the local level. So we authorize it at the national level. We write rules, but we have a county committee that authorize and appropriate the and hand out the money. Most of the studies done in the last 100 years indicate that Blacks get very little of that money. So it goes to a handful. It primarily goes to the large farmers. But even when you evaluate the funds that go to small farmers, black farmers get less. And that's why Black farmers are declining. So more need to be done to balance where the money is going. More need to be done to evaluate the conservation measures. I've often said that if they continue to improve the Chesapeake Bay with some of these measures, we might be able to walk across it, in that it certainly is not supporting fish, oysters, and crabs as it supported when I grew up, where all of those items were very plentiful. So I think we need to do more in terms of evaluating what we're doing with this money. We're going to spend a lot of money, more than ever. We have to make sure that we're buying conservation.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, how are family farmers able to get funded through the, is that working well for them?
We don't think so. I do want to jump on sort of what Lloyd said there, sure. Which is that, most of this money is only going to a few different kinds of agriculture and sort of the largest and most dominant. We have a lot of programs within the Farm Bill with the conservation title that encourage farmers to adopt environmentally responsible practices. There's a program called the Environmental Quality Incentive Program, or EQIP, which works to make sure that if farmers want to adopt a more environmentally sustainable practice, it covers the costs of making those, or some of the costs of making those improvements or investments. Unfortunately, the lion's share of those funds are going towards practices that, like Lloyd said, are, potentially not in actually improving the environment at all. There's a requirement within EQIP that 50% of all funding go to livestock operations, which is not an effective way to really improve or incentivize sustainable and regenerative agriculture for a lot of reasons. I mean, in many states, livestock makes up a very small percentage of agriculture, meaning that just a few operations have a real leg up on applying or getting this equipment. Mm-hmm. But also, it props up some really, really problematic methods of agriculture. For instance,
Wait a minute. I'd like to go explore that. So if 50% of the funds to New Jersey have to go to livestock, even though produce outnumbers livestock by, some gigantic percentage, still they get half the money.
Mm-hmm. In states where livestock makes up the lion's share of agriculture, it makes sense that they would probably get the lion's share of equipment. But we don't think there's any reason to designate 50% of EQIP funding, which is a heavily oversubscribed program. Two-thirds of farmers are turned away from EQIP every year because it just doesn't have the funding. And when you designate half of it to go to a method of agriculture that in many, many instances is the worst environmental actor, there are absolutely ways to raise livestock in ways that are good for the planet, that make your farming operation much more sustainable, that increase soil health. But concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, are really the dominant method of raising livestock in the U.S. And they receive a percentage of equal funding try to minimize their impact on their environment. Right. And the
we have to do something about this echo.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. These things happen. And so I think Michael will take care of that. Michael G. Haskins, one of the best engineers there is. And
So he will call you. Meanwhile, I understand that the livestock allocation was reduced from 60% to 50%. So we're slowly making strides on. But, you know, basically that should be a state level decision, because every state has a different mix of agriculture. And certainly one of the things that I heard last week at the farm conference was smaller grants to farmers would help, because the small grant can work for a small farmer, whereas if you give a big grant to a big company, you're eliminating a whole bunch of little grants, you know.
Oh, boy, does that make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes too much sense. No.
Yeah, it would make, well, there are a couple of things. It would help if we worked with more of the smaller farmers. And I think it would help if the farms stayed smaller. As you go to large farms, they have less connection to the land. They're farming thousands of acres, and not as connected historically to the land as family farmers would be. So I think there have been efforts for the last 25, 30 years. Senator Grassley has tried to install and enforce payment limitations, mm-hmm. to ensure that all the money didn't go to a handful of people. But folk have been very innovative in getting around those limitations. And at the end of the day, the money is going to a handful of folk. So I think there's some benefits that could be arrived at keeping the small farmers in. But the way it's being funded now, I'm not so sure that it's not designed to put the small farmers out. And especially as it relates to minority farmers, if you have a program that give money, whether it's conservation or commodity money, to a handful of folk, they are in better shape to survive emergency situations than the other farmers. So you really are helping the large farmers grow larger and putting the small farmers out by not giving them assistance. And I've said in the past that in some instances, it would be better for Black farmers if we didn't have a program at all, because the field would be level. If the Black farmers are not going to get the aid, then it's not in their best interest to see someone else getting it, to put them in a better competitive position to buy out the little guys.
Right.
So it needs a lot of work, and it's difficult to get it done because there's a lot of interest in the Farm Bill, as you well know.
Yeah.
There are a number of lobbyists for their particular programs, and it is very difficult to change, make major changes in the Farm Bill. But it needs to be changed for family farmers.
When you say put the Black farmers out, you mean put them out of business?
Correct.
Wow.
But we've gone, in 1920, there were 925,000 Black farmers. Today, there's 38,000 Black farmers. And they've lost most of their land. And the 1982 Commission on Civil Rights report said that the Department of Agriculture was a major cause of the loss of land and farms by Black farmers, and stated that if measures were not taken to change the actions at the department, there wouldn't be any Black farmers by the end of the century. Well, there are a few, but we've gone from almost 1 million down to 38,000. And that's really because of USDA and how the programs are funded. So when I say major changes, I think it's not just the Black farmers, it's the small farmers and other minority farmers suffer as well, is that Blacks have suffered more than the other groups. And I think if they don't change how they control the flow of the funds and the incentives, for example, if you are writing plans and people are being rewarded based on the number of acres, then it makes sense to work with someone who's farming 5,000 acres rather than someone who's farming 100 acres. It takes a long time to get your acreage up. So really, we need to change a lot of incentives in the Farm Bill both in terms for those who are working in technical assistance and for those who are providing funds.
That's so important. We have Joe back on the air.
Yeah. Joe, what do you have to add to that, Joe?
Oh, just, you know, I mean, like, I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, the impacts of these are disproportionately felt by farmers of color, particularly Black farmers, because of, you know, the decades of well-documented racism at USDA. But like Lloyd said, this is, you know, across the food and farm system. You know, last year we hit a record that we're not particularly proud of, which is, you know, we have the largest farms ever and the fewest farmers ever. The way that these programs at USDA work incentivize exploitation across our food and farm system, leading farmers to have to leave the jobs that they really, really love, and prevents the kinds of agriculture that really nurture and feed communities, the strong, local, resilient food systems that we'd like to see make up the majority of our food system, is just not attainable because of the way these programs like crop insurance and the payments and conservation dollars are set up.
Yeah. Crop insurance for and price guarantees for the big farms, you know, take money away from the small farms, and the big farmers, you know, would be able to survive a year, you know, with a lower yield. The small farmer with the mortgage on the tractor and the house and everything else could put them out of business completely.
Yeah, and especially the farmers that are growing, you know, specialty crops, which is a term that I don't particularly love. But, you know, yeah, the kinds of foods that people actually eat and not the commodities that are generally grown to be processed into, you know, cheap feed sold below cost to these concentrated animal feeding operations. Those farmers, specialty crop growers, have a lot of trouble accessing crop insurance, especially folks who are growing or have diversified operations. You know, in that a few years ago, we implemented a program, the Whole Farm Revenue Protection Program, which is designed to, instead of just insuring one particular crop, insure an entire operation. But it's a more complicated policy, and we found that insurance agents are reluctant to write it because they don't see it as profitable, and farmers are struggling with the paperwork to get through it. So, you know, even as we're trying to implement policies to make these programs work better for a wider spectrum of farmers, especially the farmers who need it most and who are growing food in the way that we really think food should be grown.
So they classified food as a specialty crop?
Right.
So, yeah. So specialty crops.
I mean, that sounds crazy to me, but I guess that's government, right?
Yeah. And that's how it works. You know, I'd love to call fruits and vegetables, not specialty crops.
Yeah.
That's not what the Farm Bill does. You know, we USDA hasn't invested significantly in these programs and hasn't done enough to incentivize crop insurance agents to work to make these a bigger part of their portfolios. So we can see more investment and protect the farmers who are growing food that their neighbors eat from, you know, difficult years, so they can stay on their land and keep their community safe.
Excuse us, Lloyd and Joe, as we need to take a short break.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. We'll be back with our guests, Lloyd Wright and Joe Van Wy, in a few minutes. WBAI is listener-supported, and listeners often forget to donate unless asked. So please, we beseech you to help fund this marvelous experiment in free speech.
Let's call this a WBAI rent party. Donate for any of the premiums that you'll find on Ecologic at WBAI.org. Recently, we talked about the dangers of tritium, and we offered you Dr. Arjun Makajani's book, Exploring Tritium Dangers, for a $45 donation. If you aren't able to get through, please try again, 212-209-2950. We've needed a book like Exploring Tritium Dangers for a long time. It's the only book of its kind, And with the risk of tritium being dumped in the Hudson River, we all need to learn all we can about the possible health effects of this radioactive substance. Isn't it worth $45 to know about something this important? Go to givetowbai.org or call 212-209-2950 to get your copy of Exploring Tritium Dangers and become a member of WBAI at the same time. That membership alone is a $25 value.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and our premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
Here is country singer-songwriter Luke Bryan. Some of you might know him from co-hosting American Idol. This is Here's to the Farmer.
Battle, 2,000 acres of beans and cattle, but he don't ever get rattled. He just goes till the sun goes down. Hydraulic fluid on his jeans, red dye diesel and 10 rows between, a cold one on the porch and a good night's sleep. Y'all hold him up with me now. Here's to the farmer that plants the fields in the spring, turn from green to that harvest honey. Pull one up for the banker downtown that got him on his feet with handshake money. Here's to the farmer's wife that loves him every night, raising a son, raising a daughter. They gather around the table, send it up to the father. Somehow they get closer when times get harder. Here's to the farmer. Subdivisions creeping on in. Neighborhood kids keep jumping his fence. He could double his money, but that'd be the end of a promise he'll never break. 'Cause he looked his daddy in the eye, and he's got that stubborn pride.
That was Here's to the Farmer by Luke Bryan. It was obviously written from a man's perspective, but we know there are a lot of women out there farming just as dedicated, and they deserve a similar tribute.
Well, we're waiting for your call.
What?
First of all, you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. We're back with Lloyd and Joe. And, a lot of city folks are listening to this show, and I think what they know most about when it comes to the Farm Bill are food stamps, the SNAP program. Let's go into detail about what's going on with SNAP.
Well, first of all, more than half of the budget for the Farm Bill will go to food nutrition, to SNAP.
Wow.
And most people don't know that.
Yeah.
And they are together. Now, at one time, the food nutrition program was really a program where they gave out surplus commodities, surplus right. cheese, canned goods, whatever. It's now changed to what we call food stamps, although administered in many ways, where those who get the benefits buy commercially now in grocery stores. And the commodity program, surplus commodity program, does not exist now in terms of handing out. But it is a program, and it's designed and changed in every farm bill. There are some who feel that it should be broadened so that, for example, in the school system, that every child with no regard to income level should have food available. And there are a lot of reasons why people with money send their kids off without breakfast in the morning, because they're both going to work by then. So that there's some who want to broaden the SNAP program, and the others want to cut it back. And some of the things they do about who can be available in the home in order to get benefits really have social implications later on in terms of how families are structured. But nevertheless, it's a significant part of the money, and there's a lot of interest in putting little things, depending on your political persuasion, that does not necessarily improve providing safe, healthy food to the majority of the population.
And Joe?
We at Farm Action Fund really focus on the hard.
We've lost Joe? Bill.
Did we lose Joe?
Can you hear me?
I think I hear Joe.
Very far away.
Joe, if you can tell Joe, do you have any comments about the food stamps and SNAP? Okay.
I know that they talk about, in the educational world, they talk about breakfast before the bell and the importance of getting kids a decent breakfast so that they can learn. And if, you know.
Well, yeah, it's difficult, I think, to feed to educate a hungry kid. So, out in the country, where I lived, this little 10-year-old boy was car driving his mother's car to school one morning, and he had an accident, and they stopped him. He was within sight of the school, and he got out of the car and started rushing toward the school. And they said, "Well, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm trying to make it to the school. They're still serving breakfast." He hadn't had any food, and his mother was not in position to drive him, so he took the car and did it himself. The irony of this is that in some cases, this is all the food they get when they run out of money at home. So I think there's a lot of changes we can make in that program and ensure that folk get good, healthy food so that you don't have kids sitting in the classroom without food, and we should do it in such a way that it doesn't impact people's net, their self esteem So if you gave it to all, there wouldn't be any attachment to it. In other words, feed them all, and then you don't have this problem where I don't really want to be seen on it.
Right.
So that's something that could be done, not likely because folk have other interests, but it would just make sense to feed them breakfast if they get there without it, of course, and then lunch and give them something in the evening, and at least the kids are fed.
No, it's not as if they don't know the importance of breakfast. I mean, when I was a little kid, they had signs in like every classroom, breakfast is not a rope, don't skip it. And when I was a kid, I didn't understand that sign at all because I didn't understand the whole analogy thing. I was too little. Yeah. But they've known, they know breakfast is important. Joe, you're back with us. Yay.
Yeah, you could. You can,
Yeah, so sorry about that. Having some technical issues this morning. But at Farm Action, just to get back to what you said earlier, Farm Action Fund, we're really focused on the farm end of the farm bill. But there are a lot of ways that folks, especially in this farm bill, are talking about trying to make, trying to bridge that gap between farmers and getting food directly to people. And there are a lot of barriers within SNAP that prevents those benefits from being used sort of directly for farmers, folks who engage in what's called direct marketing, getting their, fruits and vegetables directly to people instead of going through a distributor or a wholesaler. You know, you think farmers markets. There are a lot of barriers for farmers to access and get licensing and technology that they need to accept nutrition benefits administered from the government. And so, you know, we're definitely supportive of opening those up to, you know, also make provide a new income stream for farmers, try to help farmers get their food to people and get a larger share of that food dollar.
And healthy food.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, when we spoke to Lloyd earlier, he said, you want to make sure people get food that is not going to kill them.
Yes.
Kind of basic.
Well, I'm concerned. My family, we have a garden, a large garden, spring and fall garden, almost an acre in size. One of the reasons we grow it is that we don't want to eat foods that's been sprayed. For either herbicides or pesticides. So, I know you can wash it off, and we got rules on how many days you have to wait before you can harvest. I don't want it on my food at all.
Yeah.
So I grew up, we never sprayed our garden, and we still don't. We use mechanical means to control weeds and other insects. So, I'm not sure we're ever going to get there. When you're talking about large volumes, we're never going to get rid of the chemicals and that. They are there lobbying and have more influence than we will on what goes in the farm bill.
Yeah, we do.
We do have a lot. Convince folk that these chemicals are good.
System of community gardens in New York, but that's a small amount of produce that goes to a small group of people. But your community garden.
When you say you have other ways to control weeds and pests, what do you mean?
Well, for our garden, we control the weeds mechanically. We cultivate them and get the weeds out manually.
Right.
And rather than spray.
Sure.
It's a flat area. We don't have erosion interest, so there's no reason we need to spray for weeds. When we can mechanically remove them if necessary.
Okay, and insects?
We try to grow crops. We grow primarily early spring and late fall crops and not summer crops. So when you get to frost area, and I haven't picked greens yet, although they're ready. By the time I get ready to pick them, the bugs will be gone. The weather will have taken care of them. Mm-hmm. And I actually freeze much of my greens so I can eat them all year. So we've tried to do it that way primarily. So we try to grow crops early spring and late fall. And we grow tomatoes in the summer, and we've never had a real problem with insects on those. But the other crops, leafy crops, we grow late fall and early spring crops.
So
our folk can't do that now because you need vegetables and doing all the year. But for our purpose, we do.
We'd love to have you call with your questions, folks. It's getting to that time. So if you have questions about the farm bill, call 212-209-2877. Now's your time to call 212-209-2877. And while we're waiting for your call, we wanted to let you know about three upcoming WBAI meetings open to the public. Tonight from 6 to 7 on WBAI, there's a report to listeners from WBAI management, followed by a local station board meeting at 7 p.m. On Sunday, October 15th, the Community Advisory Board meets at 1 p.m. And on Monday, October 16th, the WBAI Outreach and Fundraising Task Force meets at 7 p.m. All are welcome. Instructions for all three can be found by looking for meetings on WBAI.org. Just scroll down.
Joe, what do you have to add to about organic farmers?
Yeah, so I just wanted to flag one other item that, you know, when we're talking about the farm bill, it's a massive, massive piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. And often really dangerous things get sort of snuffed in. Lloyd mentioned, organic farming and pesticides. And there's one thing that I wanted folks here to be aware of, which is a bill that is trying, some folks are trying to get included in the farm bill this year that we're deeply, deeply concerned about for a number of reasons. But it's a bill called the Ending Agricultural Trade Suppression Act, or the EATS Act. And basically, it was introduced in direct response to a ballot initiative out of California that would have disallowed the sale of pork raised in gestation crates, preventing the sale of pork when pigs are just kept in little boxes their whole lives. Which is really a dominant method used by the biggest pork producers, not a lot of the sort of smaller folks who use more responsible methods of production. But the bill, as drafted, would overturn more than 1,000 state and local laws. Wow. It prevents any state or local regulation of any agricultural practice.
That's crazy!
Wow.
It's a really, really dangerous bill that goes well beyond the scope of what they're intending to do, which we also think it would hurt a lot of producers who could capitalize on these new markets for pork that is raised in more responsible ways. But this would prevent a lot of the state work that has been done on pesticide regulation, on more healthy, natural and sustainable methods of farming. So I just want everyone to be aware of this bill and to know that it's something that we're really encouraging folks to oppose inclusion in the farm bill.
That's good. I was about to ask what listeners can do. So one thing is oppose the EATS bill. What else?
we might want to take that one call that we have because we're running out of time.
I didn't see that. Sorry. Yes.
Caller, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for this discussion. It's critical that people, especially in the cities, know. This is Pastor Michael Vincent Crea. I worked on a 1,000-acre, 400-hectare dairy farm in upstate New York. I was helping out the family after the father died at 56 of cancer right after they instituted in the 70s the no-till method, which I don't know if it's Monsanto or whatever. But at 56, having lived a wonderful, healthy life, one shouldn't be dying of cancer. That's the first thing. Second thing, the African-American farmers, the black farmers won their case. And as far as I know, they still haven't been paid the reparations that they're supposed to get. Thirdly, I lived in D.C. for 10 years, so I know how they work not to work. Now they have what they call block grants. Block grants are racist. Block grants say, oh, we're giving you $500 million for farming. But then people who get the money, the legislators, put it to their own interest, and not to the best interest of the people. The third thing or fourth thing I want to mention is food stamps. When Obama was in, I had $200. When the administration changed, I had went down to 188. So please don't parrot the propaganda. SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. When I was dislocated and I was in the hotel, and this is liberal New York, my monthly allowance for daily for 30 days was $17. Not $17 a day, $17 for the whole month, 53 cents a day. So people have to know what's going on.
Wow.
What happened last week in Congress. So thank you very much. We've got to stay informed. And this is the last thing.
Yeah.
Nikki Leyland was a black agricultural, I think the first black agricultural secretary. And he and four other members of the Clinton administration were accused of wrongdoing. All were acquitted. This is the modus operandi of the Republicans. Thank you.
Okay, what do you want listeners to do to change the farm bill? And we have about 20 seconds for you guys to tell us.
Well, let me quickly respond to the Pickford lawsuit.
We don't have time. Just tell people what they can do, how to contact you or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Because contact your representative if you have an opinion, and that they are now writing the farm bill. And the comments just made, I agree with them. And if you want your representative to support that, write your congressman and senator.
Okay. Joe?
So just in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
It's really important that everybody weigh in on the farm bill. Even the farm policy affects what you eat. Even if there's not a farm in on your block or in your neighborhood, what is in the farm bill impacts what winds up on your table. So it's important to reach out to your member of Congress, because a lot of folks, especially in urban areas, urban members of Congress don't tend to engage on the whole farm bill. But the whole farm bill impacts what you eat. So reach out your office and encourage them to fight for a farm bill that works for you.
Well, it's time to wrap up. So thanks for joining us, everybody, with Lloyd Wright and Joe Van Wy. For more information, go to www.farmaction.us. That's farmaction.us. We have details on the farm bill and what you can do on our site, ecoradio.org. That's ecoradio.org. We also have an archive of our past shows.
And you can send your representatives this show to educate them on the farm bill. And yesterday at 11 a.m., I did a show with Michael Smith of Law and Disorder about Dennis Edge, and we offered Dennis's beautiful and interesting book, The Birds of Tompkins Square Park, for a $60 donation. Call 212-209-2950.
There are two events coming up for those interested in the environmental benefits of passenger rail. First, on October 21st at 12:30 p.m., the National Rail Users Network holds a virtual mini-conference on passenger rail and the environment, Natural Allies. And the next morning, on Sunday, October 22nd at 11 a.m., the Ethical Culture Society of Bergen County, and on Zoom, there's a panel discussion on transit, the sustainable alternative, at which I am one of the panelists. We have information on both events on ecoradio.org. Join us on Wednesdays to support Ecologic, you can Wednesdays at 10 a.m. And to support Ecologic, you can donate any amount, get one of our premiums, or become a BAI buddy.
We'd love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
WBAI is community radio, and there are lots of ways to get involved. Of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We're always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. If you listen live, we may be able to take your call and answer your question. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, October 18th at 10 a.m. for the check our website for details. If we're not on, if they preempt us, then we will be on the following week. Thanks to for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
good day, everyone. The next WBAI Advisory Board meeting will be held on Sunday, October 15th at 1 p.m. The meeting will be held by teleconference. The call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641-711. Everyone is welcome to call in and join the meeting. Once again, the call-in number is 619-309-1058, and the PIN number is 641-711. It's just another way to show your support for this great station. Thank you.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. This is the first LSB meeting after the expected announcement of WBAI election results. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The LSB meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacific calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099, and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Meeting ID again, 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, so it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we sure hope that you do. Hey, thank you.
99.1 WBAI, New York.
When trumpets were mellow and every guy only had one fellow, no need to remember.
Hi, I'm David Kenny of Everything Old Is New Again. Every Sunday night at 10, please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950.